You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. If he does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right-end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your hosts, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
Welcome back, everybody, to this game week edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast. I am your host, Ross Uglum, and joining me for the first time since the what we would call the transfer of power is Ryan Burns. Ryan Burns, I guess we now have to call you the director of recruiting content here at the Bison Report, but perhaps more importantly, the publisher of Gopher Illustrated. How are we doing?
I'm doing well. I know that Bison fans are thrilled to have their publisher be on site in Fargo instead of me trying to do everything from Minneapolis. And I know that I've told you this offline, but I couldn't be any prouder of the way you've run that site. And now it's all yours. And it all started with you emailing me out of the blue back in the day. Essentially a cold call email, and now here we are. So I couldn't be any more excited about the direction of this website.
Absolutely. What a journey. Heck of a journey. But we want to check in with you. We've got Trevor Gebhardt, the football analyst, on a little bit later in the show to sort of break down game week at Butler. And I just want to, you know, address the elephant in the room. This is a party. We are all going to a party. The Bison are favored by 7 touchdowns, which is something
and
that
when you told me that line, yeah, that's absolutely absurd that the line's 46 and a freaking half. That's just crazy.
It is. And Trevor and I already did kind of the season preview, folks. So if you're here for hard hitting analysis on just how the Bison are going to beat Butler 56-7, I feel like you need to go elsewhere for that, because there's going to be nothing hard hitting about it. Vegas understands that. I understand that. I need you to understand that. We're just going to have a little bit of fun. Trevor and I, you know, had a lot of fun. His interview was recorded before this. We had a lot of fun talking about Trey's situation and not getting complacent going into a game when you're favored heavily, playing in a place. You know, when you're an FCS athlete, you don't usually play in front of 35,000 people. So getting ready for that, it was a lot of fun. Not a lot of nitty-gritty X's and O's, but that's all right. What we need Ryan for, though, is to transition us a little bit into the recruiting phase, because we haven't talked recruiting on the pod for a while. NDSU is blowing my mind in the sense that I think they only have one or two scholarships left, especially now with Luke Dwyer leaving the team, which is something that we address later on in the show. But they are in danger of wrapping up their entire class, you know, before the conference season even begins. And NDSU basketball is in tremendous shape as well, having had Jordan Horn transfer away from the program, allowing for a 2020 point guard to be a main target and then to kind of continue to build on the success that sort of started with that run in Sioux Falls last year, but I think has been magnified by a NCAA tournament victory, magnified by a successful foreign trip through Puerto Rico, some key signings. These guys look talented and really set up for the future well. Ryan, who is a target now for North Dakota State football? How are they trying to kind of wrap up this class? And what can we expect as far as numbers moving forward?
Yeah, you mentioned it, that I think this is the first time with, well, Matt Ensign, his first full year here, that you're able to see him kind of transition towards what 2019 football recruiting is. And that's essentially wrapping up the majority of your recruiting class before the season. I mean, you look at what they have right now, 17 commits. And I know from talking with my sources close to the Bison football staff that, like you mentioned, there may be one or two spots available. And at that point, they're just going to go best player available, which they should at that point, because once you've addressed those needs, you really can just kind of wait and see who kind of opens up in that September, October, so you know who to target and who to go visit in November and December. And you look at this class, and I look at them, you know, for the Minnesota, for the Twin Cities Bison, guys that I've had a chance to see, and some guys in Western Wisconsin as well. I mean, it starts locally, and that's with Seth Anderson, and that's with Mason Miller. You're able to get your two offensive linemen there for AJ Blazek, and you're able to get them to stay home because these are guys that had FBS interest, and they decided that, yeah, I could potentially go explore things further south and see how that goes from there, or I could just stay up here in the Fargo-Moorhead area, and I could go to Fargo and become a Bison. And so those two are big gets to stay in locally. Then you look at some of the other kids in Minnesota here, TK Marshall, who for my money and from the college coaches I've talked to, they believe he's the best running back in this class for Minnesota. Someone that had a plentiful amount of Missouri Valley offers. You also have Rajon Nelson, someone that I know the Gophers like quite a bit as a preferred walk-on. He's not the biggest guy. He's only 5'9". He's not the fastest guy. Probably only runs a 4.7". But what he is a playmaker with the ball in his hands, and he's incredibly elusive. You watch his tape, and he played for Lakeville North last year, the eventual state champion over Eden Prairie, and he was a big factor for them at running back and wide receiver. He was following Bryce Benhart on the offensive line there, but when he gets the ball and he gets, whether it's into the mishmash in the middle or whether he gets outside, everything is smooth. Everything is elusive. I mean, he's not going to wow you with a jump cut. He's just going to make sure that he makes you miss and he gets vertical. And you all also look at some of the guys like Losheaka Rokes. I mean, I love it when these guys have these difficult names, Ross. But what I've seen from Rokes at a couple of different camps this summer is he's not the biggest guy. You know, on his huddle, he's listed as 6'4", 215 pounds. Well, when he showed up at Minnesota earlier this year, he was about 6'2", 195. But he's incredibly explosive. And that's where you look at NDSU trying to figure out whether he's a linebacker or a defensive end. All that matters is he's 6'2", and he's explosive. And so whether you need to use him coming off the edge as a defensive lineman and bulk him up, or whether he transitions back to a linebacker, they're coming into Minnesota and making sure that the guys that Minnesota decides to pass on, I mean, they're making sure they clean up with them, and they're beating North Dakota, South Dakota, South Dakota State for these guys. And those are the big recruiting victories. You look at most of the guys in this class, and you look at the offer list on them, South Dakota State, North Dakota, South Dakota, all these guys would have loved to have them. And then NDSU is able to come in and make sure that they get them committed and they stay committed.
Absolutely. As far as guys to watch, one name that I know is Felix Anadike, who I think is he a Twin Cities product?
Say that name again.
Felix Anadike. He is. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He's from another prominent recruiting area for North Dakota State, which would be Lee's Summit, Missouri. If you remember King Frazier, King was from Lee's Summit. That's kind of that Kansas right. City area that they've heavily recruited. I know for a fact that Felix Anadike is somebody at a defensive end with the length and the athleticism that they're trying to continue to raise the bar. And Felix is somebody that I know that they're zeroing in on. You're really close with Ryan James, who is, I think, the foremost recruiting source of information for the state of Minnesota, which is really somewhere that Coach Richmond has kind of refocused his energy, is into the Twin Cities and into even rural Minnesota to try and get guys to be Bison, the guys that maybe don't get the Gopher offer. Now that NDSU is finally starting to see, you know, some of these classes stick around, you've got a number of upperclassmen both this season and next. You're going to graduate Jared Samuelson and Tyson Ward and Vinny Shaheed this season, and frankly, Chris Quayle. And then a year from now, you'll lose Cam Hunter, Rocky Cruiser, and Tyler Witts. What have you heard about what North Dakota State is trying to do over the next 2 years to kind of not necessarily recoup those losses, but just to continue this train rolling?
Yeah, I think you have to start in this immediate upcoming class here in the 2020 class, where I'm not sure if you've been following the reports from the Prep Hoops guys out in North Dakota, but the two guys that they have committed from North Dakota there, in Bowden Skunberg and Grant Nelson, I know Bowden, he has been lighting it up in terms of he's been for his AAU team. I mean, I've seen the tweets where he's putting up 33, 35, 37 points a game, and he's been absolutely lights out from behind the arc. And so I don't know that he's necessarily going to be your primary ball handler. I think you'd agree he's probably going to be an off guard, your two guard, your three guard, trying to make sure that, you know, say they get into the lane and you can just dish it out for the three. I think that's probably his role early on. But that being said, this kid knows how to score. And with, you mentioned the guys that are going to be leaving, they're going to need some help scoring the ball here coming up. And so I think being able to get Bowden committed as early as they did, so he doesn't have a chance to potentially blow up to the Northern Iowas and the Creightons and the, you know, maybe he gets even bigger time with the Iowa States and Minnesota. I mean, this kid wants to be in North Dakota. Jamestown kid wants to come to Fargo. And I, from what I've seen reports wise, he's been performing very well over the summer. And then Grant Nelson from Devil's Lake, anytime you're able to beat out North Dakota for a kid, I think you're going to have to be pretty happy with that. A 6'8" big man that's not afraid to light it up from behind the arc. And so, I mean, Ross, you would know better than I, but I would imagine that's probably going to draw some comparisons to Rocky Cruiser in terms of a big man that can shoot, probably going to be more of a finesse guy earlier in his career before he starts to bulk up towards the latter half. But between those two guys, they've got a really good base. And then it comes down to the point guard position. And then we've done some articles about him on the Bison Report, but the big name to know is Dalton Banks from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Someone that NDSU's had on campus a couple times here. Dalton has, believe, 8, 9, 10 D1 offers, especially ones closer to home in Wisconsin. I believe he's got UW Green Bay amongst other ones there. So can Coach Richmond close on Banks and really make this 2020 class one that they're beating out some schools that they want to beat out? And from all indications are, these are three guys that could help early on in their Bison careers.
Yeah, and joining me as usual is Bison Report lead football analyst Trevor Gebhardt. Trev, how are we doing this evening?
I'm doing good, Ross. How about yourself, man?
Well, it's game week, brother. I mean, you got to be excited. Did you watch? How much week zero did you watch?
So I watched a little bit of the non-FCS related Miami-Florida game. And I watched a brief little bit of the FCS kickoff between Youngstown and Samford. Had to get my Missouri Valley fix on, but I was running errands and I was planning on a grill out party. So a lot of my time was on the grill, which is good enough for me on opening week.
So I got to ask, we're kind of in a similar situation to a few spots that you were in during your career, but at the same time, it's very different because it's a neutral site game with a big crowd, but you were more in what I guess you would call enemy territory with a big crowd. You participated in Colorado State and Kansas State, correct?
Yeah, and then Iowa State in 14 was my senior season.
Okay, so what is it like to have maybe the biggest game on your schedule, those FBS games, kick off the season? And what would folks would assume would be your toughest opponent, whether it be the guys that played against Iowa or, like you said, Kansas State, Colorado State, Iowa State?
You really approach it the same way you do every week. There is a heightened sense of focus just because you can't afford to make mistakes that you would be able to against, you know, let's say a Delaware State or a Prairie View A&M or Incarnate Word. You know, it's not to knock those programs, but you're playing against guys that are, you know, on paper a lot more highly touted than you were in high school. They're probably just a little bit bigger, maybe a little bit faster or a little bit stronger when they were 17 or 18 years old. So really the biggest thing is you might just have a little bit of chip on your shoulder. You know, referencing some of the Minnesota games, a lot of the guys that we had on our team from the Minneapolis area, obviously, they had a little bit of heightened sense of focus because they felt that that was a place they maybe belonged or deserved to at least get an opportunity to play. And they wanted to show why they belonged. And the results speak for themselves. But, you know, as far as like how you approach your day-to-day and just your practice and your overall state of mind, it's generally the same because you can't – just emotionally, you can't get too high or too low because if you get too low – obviously that's not good. And if you get too high, you come crashing down the next week. So, which you often see with the Bison hangover, with teams in the Valley when they maybe lose the next game. So, the biggest key, when you have a game that there is a lot of excitement, is just staying even keel, and making sure that you're on your P's and Q's when it is a team that can give you a little bit more challenge than maybe somebody that you're favored by a lot.
Yeah, and speaking of being favored by a lot, that's one thing I kind of want to touch on before we get into some of the more newsy kind of articles. What was it like? And I'm sure you guys didn't necessarily pay attention to betting lines, but you knew when you were heavy favorites, or you should have known. What's it like being a 5, 6, 7 touchdown favorite, and how do you avoid complacency when, you know, most of the fans, parents, et cetera, are expecting to show up to a blowout?
So kind of a loaded question. So, I mean, realistically, while you're in it and while you're ingrained in it every day, you go through fall camp, you're in practice every day, you're going to classes. There is so much going on. Despite the fact that you might know you're playing a team that may not be as high of quality as like an FBS opponent or a really solid ranked non-conference opponent, for example, you really just have to, like I said earlier, just make sure you're on your P's and Q's and you're on your assignment alignment, because that is the stuff that's going to show up on tape that teams will pick up on come conference play and playoff. They might think that you are not mentally ready if you're not ready for a team that is a quote-unquote less formidable opponent. So just making sure that you're on your P's and Q's, your alignment assignment is on point, and that your focus doesn't take a huge dip despite the fact of being a big favorite or a large point spread.
And one little bit of news I just want to clean up as far as we're concerned is something I reported earlier today, which is that Lucas Dwyer from Lake Zurich, Illinois, one of the higher-ranked recruits for NDSU this past class, it'd be the class of 2019, has left the team for personal reasons. I don't have any more information on that, nor do I care to speculate about it. Just that as general information, Luke Dwyer is no longer a member of the North Dakota State football program. Some other news, and this is certainly old news, I would say, at this point, since we're a full week after the announcement, but Trev, you and I haven't had a chance to chat, is the fact that the Bison have chosen a starting quarterback, and they've, in theory, chosen a four-year starter, a kid in Trey Lance who has a chance to start more games than Brock Jensen, start more games than Easton Stick if he can stay healthy and really certainly put his stamp on the record books at North Dakota State with the talent level that he's going to play with. He's a very, very impressive physical specimen at 6'3". I've been around the kid. He looks like he's 25 years old. He is just an athletic marvel and somebody that Bison fans should be really, really excited to watch. Someone that Coach Entz mentioned, you know, how important the four-game rule was for him last year, the ability to get in live reps against North Alabama, get in live reps against the University of South Dakota, scoring a rushing touchdown, frankly, in both games, and frankly, both were extremely impressive, one on a fumbled snap and one on a scramble that was just absolutely electrifying. But I think Bison fans are really interested to see what the kid can do with his arm. There have been a couple of, you know, videos leaking out of fall camp that have been really impressive, but this is a kid that spins it, man, and he throws an incredible ball. I think he's going to have a lot on his shoulders with this young group of receivers, and that's something that we're going to touch on in a second, Trev. But what I want right now is you were kind of around campus during a quarterback battle when Jose and Brock were kind of going into each other trying to win that job, because after that, there basically haven't been any battles. It was going to be Brock, then it was going to be Carson, then it was going to be Easton. So tell us a little bit about after Brock wins that champion or wins that job and he is the starter. What changes about his attitude? What changes about the receiver's attitude? And frankly, what changes about the team just knowing that they have a leader now, a clear leader?
Yeah, so I mean, it's really just a heightened sense of confidence between the players and the coaches because you go into every practice knowing who your guy is. You know who everyone needs to rally around when it comes from a leadership standpoint. And I think just having somebody that can put that on their own shoulders. So like Brock, for example, knowing where he stands with everything and where he stands as far as having the keys to the program. So I really just think it's big from a confidence booster, because you can't have that question lingering all season. So just having the team know who, quote unquote, their guy is probably the biggest key in that aspect.
Let's talk a little bit about these young receivers. So I posited the question that Coach answered in the press conference today. It's a saying of his that the further you are away from the ball at the snap, the more likely you are to contribute on, early on in your career. And that's very simple. The smaller guys don't have to put on as much weight, don't have to add as much strength to play the skill position, to play corner, to play safety, to play receiver. You can be, 185 pounds without really causing yourself a tremendous amount of issues. I want to ask what's on Braylon Henderson, Jacob Lippi, and DJ Baptist's plate, because Ants specifically mentioned those three players as kids that have gotten reps with the ones and twos. When they go against a scout, Lippi, Baptist, and Henderson have all been, with the actual team. They haven't been on scout team. They've been with the ones and the twos, and part of that group that looks like it might be getting some work. So you played when you played snaps your first season or two. You played with guys that had to go in as true freshmen. What is on the plate of these young receivers?
It's definitely more than what they're used to from the ages of 15 to 18. I'll tell you that much. They more than likely will have a welcome to college football moment. Unless you're a dude's dude, such as like a Billy Turner. I don't even know if he would ever have a welcome to college football moment. But I'm sure he gave plenty of guys theirs. Their eyes will be wide right away. Some of them played in big situations and big games, so I don't think the bright lights will get to them. But coming out for that first warm-up, there's going to be some jitterbugs. But it's no different than your first snap of varsity football. And I will say, I was actually more nervous in my first snap of varsity high school football than I was in Fargo. Played as a freshman, as a lot of us did at that time. But the preparation that we had for a month was a lot different than I was used to in high school. So some of these guys come from really good programs where they were always well-prepared in high school, I'm sure. Very well-ran programs, as is NDSU, obviously. So, I don't know if their experience in high school mimics what they're going through now in terms of, like, a challenge at their stage of football. But you're going to have some jitterbugs, so just get those first snaps in and realize that you're doing the exact same thing that you do every day. And quite frankly, the competition you're going up against in fall camp is probably tougher than what you're seeing right now. So once you get that first lick in, it just kind of goes to the wayside, and it's just football. Football's football, and if you can play, you can play. So it's really just not making a huge mental error those first few snaps or first series or whatever it is, and you move on and you grow. So they don't have a choice, because if they're the best guy for the job, they're going to have to mature quick and just make a statement. And they do that, they'll be just fine.
Let's talk a little bit about the actual game. We've mentioned that this is a game in which NDSU is favored tremendously. I believe the last time I looked, 48.5 was the line, which you're looking at 54-7 or whatever it may be to cover that spread, which is, it's a lot of points. I mean, it's a tremendous amount of points. It's likely where North Dakota State's not going to be favored by that much ever again. This season, I don't think that there will be a game during this season where they'll be 48, 49 point favorites. You might see some numbers in the 20s. You might see some numbers in the 30s, depending on how conference play goes for some of the programs that are struggling in the Valley, or maybe a first round playoff against maybe a non-scholarship D1 or somebody from one of those lower leagues. But this is not supposed to be a competitive game. You talked a little bit about focus going in, but what do you think the offensive game plan is going to look like with a really young quarterback? Strength is definitely, his athleticism, but at the same time, I would think that they want to air it out a little bit in case they need to do it against UND or Delaware or, frankly, any time in the Valley.
Yeah, so I don't want to give away too much here. But I would anticipate those first 10 plays being very basic. I would anticipate something out of the backfield as far as like a, not necessarily a wheel route, but maybe a bubble screen or maybe a quick slant or a quick out, like a stick route, and heavy power. Simply because you got some young guys out there and some young cats that you're going to be relying on. You want to get them comfortable. So your first series or two, just make sure that they're getting the snap off and going, hey, I know this is college football. I know that you're the guy now, and I know you're in a different position as far as responsibility goes, but it's still football. You've done this since you were a kid, and there's a reason we recruited you here. So once you just get those first few jitterbugs out of the way, like we just talked about, they'll be just fine, and then they'll probably progress the playbook just a little bit. I don't know if they'll advance it too much. Just because it is game one, you don't want to give away too much before Valley play. But they'll probably take a random shot down the field. They'll probably change up, maybe an audible or two if they're ready for that. Just to kind of challenge them mentally, just to see where they're at and where they can go into these more tougher non-conference games. Because you're going to run into situations against better opponents, on paper that is, for now, to where – not everything's going to go as scripted like it probably will in this game to start. So I think giving them a challenge at random points in the game, even if things are going very well, will be important. So, if you see a random mistake in the game, whether it's a miscue between quarterback and receiver, that's probably it right there. So not necessarily chalked up to a youth. It is to an extent, but it's only because they're challenging them to a level that they haven't yet in a live rep. So, personally, I'm hoping that happens because this is where it's meant to do that. But it would also be good to see guys making plays down the field and as well as Trey making a nice throw down the field to strike up the band. So we'll see what happens, but anticipate early, not a lot of action to go on.
Defensively, you've got a number of new guys in the back seven. Those guys have to communicate, play in, play out. And you've also, frankly, got a new defensive coordinator in David Braun coming in from UNI. What do you think the game plan looks like for Code Green against Butler at Target Field?
I'm going to use an offensive expression here, but being your spot on time. So it all goes back to alignment assignment. You don't have guys that have the Marcus Williams pedigree, guys that you can't just go, okay, go out and play ball, do what you do. But they are good players, so you don't want to keep them too tight, but you've also got to put them in the right situation. So as long as they are covering their zones, making their reads, and not getting caught watching the quarterback, that sort of thing, they'll be just fine. I mean, there's a reason they're recruited to Fargo, but I don't think the dog's going to be called on to wreak havoc right away. I mean, you'll probably see some of it, but I don't think it's going to be a free-for-all where guys are playing to the speed that they'll be playing in about week three or week four.
Last question. You mentioned to me in the pre-production meeting that your first kind of introduction to North Dakota State football, the understanding what the Bison were all about, was that SportsCenter highlight of Tyler Roll taking a touchdown in from 80 yards against the Gophers in 2007. We're running a Minneapolis Moments kind of a thread or sort of a concurrent series on the Twitter account for the Bison Report. What was your favorite Minneapolis moment? Either one that you watched kind of as a kid getting recruited, or you were obviously there in 2011 out with an injury, I believe, but you were right there on the sideline for that two-touchdown victory over the Gophers.
If I had to pick one, I mean, obviously beat Minnesota my freshman year. I was nursing a hamstring that week, but obviously a great moment there. But I would probably say it was the old Diesel T-roll taking one 80 yards to the crib. I mean, I knew what North Dakota State was. I knew it existed, and I knew it was in Fargo, but that was about the extent of it. But when I saw that, I was actually watching the game live. and I just saw this thick, bruising fullback-looking guy take a bubble screen 80 yards against a team that was, I guess, somewhat two divisions ahead of them at the time, because that was what – they were still not even playoff eligible at that time. So, you know, to me, I thought, okay, that place is a little bit different. And then later on that year was Dakota Marker game, which unfortunately NDSU was on the wrong side of. But I think seeing that opened my eyes up to what that program was slash is. And now being friends with T-Roll, it's pretty cool to look back at that well over a decade later now, going, okay, that's pretty sweet that that was my first introduction to the Bison.
Absolutely. So I want to thank you, Trev, for your insights this week, of course. And the other thing that I want to do is tell everybody where you and I are going to be at this weekend. We want you guys, if you're Bison Report Radio listeners, if you are subscribers, if you're even just frequent visitors to Bison Report, we want to meet you guys and say what's up. And, you know, we'd really like it if you'd buy us a beer. That'd be just spectacular. So Trev and I are going to be at Darby's this weekend. I will be on Jeff and Jeremy Jorgensen's show, The Insiders, live at Darby's Pub and Grill. It's about a 7-minute walk from the stadium. And I'll be there from 11 to 1 on Friday, helping with The Insiders, providing some insights into the game the next day. And then for the first time ever, Bison Report Radio is going to kind of co-produce Andy Rickoff's show, the morning kickoff with Andy Rickoff from 9 to 10. So I will be, from 9 to 11. I will be there from 9 to 11 on Saturday morning. We're going to have some awesome guests. We're going to have two of Trevor's roommates from college, Brock Jensen and Ryan Smith. And then our boy Trev will get off the plane from sunny South Carolina, come to Darby's, and then be featured on Brad Jones and Nate Tangway's show from 11 to noon. So, guys, come to Darby's Pub and Grill. And like I said, find us. You know, say hi. We'll chat Bison football. We love talking Bison football. That's what we love to do. Thanks, Trev. I appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, Ross.
All right, so let's get into that game coming up on Saturday afternoon where the North Dakota State Bison are heading down to Target Field to take on Butler. We mentioned it earlier in the show. NDSU is a 46.5-point favorite as we record it today on Five Dimes, over-under of 57. So even with some changes coming to this team at the head coach and at the quarterback position, maybe the two biggest positions in the game of football, does it surprise you that the line for this game is so massive?
No, it really doesn't. Just in the sense of I can see it going that way. I don't view Butler as at all a realistic threat, much less, you know, when you're talking about, okay, they beat Youngstown State, and that's something we'll talk about a little bit later, but this is not going to be a close game. This is a celebration of you know, Bison Nation. It's a celebration of the strong ties to the Twin Cities, whether it be, you know, the fact that Matt's recruiting ties are Twin Cities based. The tremendous amount of North Dakota State alumni that are in the Twin Cities area, the massive amount of kids on North Dakota State's roster from the state of Minnesota. That's what this whole thing's about. Would they have loved to get a better opponent? Yeah, probably. But this is about playing football in front of 35,000 football or Bison fans at a cool stadium. That's what this is about.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you know, a Butler team. I don't believe they're a scholarship D1 team in terms of the football side of things.
Pioneer League, yep.
But this is a team that beat Youngstown State last year. So I would imagine, as Vegas thinks, they're not going to be able to do that at Target Field this upcoming Saturday. But, I mean, this is a team that is capable of an upset.
It's that way if you talk to the head coach. I found out at the press conference that Coach Entz showed a 4-minute video of kind of the highlights and the reactions of the Youngstown players after Butler beat Youngstown State a season ago. So this is something definitely to be paid attention to, and they are not overlooking it. In fact, I've had a couple of questions in mind to ask at the season opening press conference, one of them being, do you go into this game with a plan to make sure that two or three quarterbacks get snaps? And I shelved that one because he just wasn't going to answer it. They weren't going to talk about the fact that they'll likely be up 30 or 40 points at some point in this game. They are taking Butler very seriously, and if they're not, they're fooling everybody else. So this is a game that is definitely being treated like the Super Bowl, you know, in the first week of the season. Now, is it going to play out that way? No. Butler caught Youngstown in a weird spot, and you know, the rest of their season didn't play out that way. And this is going to be a tremendous home field advantage in front of a team that, if you even just look at their depth chart, they can't physically match up with North Dakota State. That's the number one problem.
All right. So when you look at what NDSU is on the offensive side of the ball on Saturday, outside of the obvious being what does an offense look like without Carson Wentz and now Easton Stick behind the helm, you're going to have redshirt freshman Trey Lance back there. How do you expect NDSU to be able to move the ball at Target Field?
I've always kind of described this Trey Lance offense as maybe a little bit of a souped up version of the offense that North Dakota State ran when Carson Wentz got hurt and Easton Stick came in. Easton was such a just fantastic athlete, and everybody knew it. And right away, you know, they put in all this read option stuff and QB power and jet sweeps, fake jet sweeps to the QB power. They had all this QB run stuff in. If you had a game where they ran 60 plays, 45 were going to be runs and 15 were going to be pass calls. Some of those were going to be pass calls with, you know, on a bootleg where the option is there to run even more. I don't know if that's going to continue throughout the entire season, but I would expect this to be a very run-heavy offense. Trey is so gifted, and not only is, you know, his throwing ability a bit in question, and not that we're questioning it like we don't think he can do it. We're questioning it because we truly don't know. The other part in question, I think, is the receiver group, and I think that's a legitimate concern or question. You lose Darius Shepherd, you lose Dallas Freeman, who frankly was the number two, and what are you left with at the receiver group? You've got Phoenix Sproles and Christian Watson, who had 14 catches between them last year total, you know, one per game or less than one per game, and then you've got Braylon Henderson, DJ Baptist, true freshmen that are going to see significant minutes, Jimmy Kapouras, who was supposed to be a threat from the slot last year but then kind of basically ceded playing time when they decided they were going to use Darius Shepherd there almost exclusively. It's such a big unknown. Is Ben Ellefson going to help? Yes. Are Josh Babich and Noah Gindorf going to take that next step and help? Absolutely. But there are so fewer questions about the running attack than there are about the passing attack, and it's a school that ran the heck out of the football already anyway.
So on the defensive side of the ball, I would imagine, as you probably think, just like Vegas does, where Butler's probably not going to score a lot of points in this game. I mean, Vegas is thinking something around the 7-10 point area. So if that's going to come into fruition, what does North Dakota State have to do on the defensive side of the ball? And who are some of the new faces that fans, if they do come down to Target Field or just watch the game, are going to see on Saturday?
You're going to see a number of new faces, and I think – what one guy people are going to be really excited about is Michael Tutsi. Michael Tutsi is a kid who, man, Chris Kleiman could barely keep that guy's name out of his mouth. I mean, just constantly heaping praise on him when he was one of the best defenders on the scout team as a true freshman, to last year when they made a point of making sure that Tutsi got meaningful snaps, spelling Robbie Grimsley and reducing Robbie's snaps. Robbie is a multiple-time All-American, you know, just top level NCAA football player, and they felt comfortable taking him off the field and making sure that Michael Tutsi got meaningful reps. This kid is really going to be a highlighted player, as all the strong safeties are. I mean, you go NDSU history and talk about strong safeties. Craig Dahl, Colton Hegel, Robbie Grimsley. These guys all had multiple all-conference / all-American honors. It's a featured position in this defense and really one of tremendous tradition. Those guys were all spectacular football players. Then you're going to be paying attention to the linebackers where, boy, you're in a situation where you've got one guy who's the best defensive player in FCS and probably one of the 15 or 20 best defensive players in college football in Jabril Cox. Then you've got some questions. One has been answered. They've been talking about this walk-on kid, Jackson Hankey, who is obviously on scholarship now. He's been the Michael Tutsi of the linebacker room, except Jackson was a walk-on. As a true freshman, they raved about his work at the Mike linebacker and scout. Last year, he was a redshirt freshman, got him on teams, made sure he got some snaps with the defense. Now he has a chance to be the starting Mike at NDSU for 3 years. North Dakota kid, hard worker, big kid, has a nice frame for that Mike linebacker spot. And then you've got some questions at that other at the will position. Aaron Mercadal, coming off of a very serious knee injury, has been granted a sixth season of eligibility. So he'll be a junior this year instead of being a senior. He has a chance to man that position for 2 years. You're going to watch him play a lot of football on Saturday, I think, and really for the first time in kind of a featured role on the defense. And then you've got another guy who is just an absolute special teams assassin in Jackson Brown. Jackson came to North Dakota State as a safety, but is now moved to linebacker and wants a chance to play defense. And I think his work as just an assassin on teams has frankly earned him that request. And then they want to see what Jasir Cox has. They pulled Jasir's red shirt a season ago. He played more than the four games that they're allowed. And he's going to get a lot of time as well as I think they'll give Bo Polly, who's a junior from Becker High School in Minnesota, not just because he's from Minnesota, but because I think he has a legitimate shot at being part of the rotation at that linebacker spot. As far as the defensive line is concerned, the starters are all guys that you've seen, guys that you've watched play, but there are some really exciting prospects that will come in and rotate that you likely haven't seen before. On the defensive end side of it, you've got guys like Justice Kelly, who's now a junior. He was a former walk-on that I think is going to get some burn, but the guys everybody's excited about are Tony Pierce and Barty Ogbu, both really, really exciting prospects. Barty, a redshirt freshman, a very thick guy from Bismarck, and then Tony, an undersized pass-rushing defensive end, kind of in that Greg Menard mold from Lakeland, Florida. And then Dylan Evans, I think, should see significant time at the defensive tackle position. And they might also work in Lane Tucker, who was a highly regarded recruit in the class of, I believe, 2017. So those are some of the names to watch for on defense. You've still got Derek Tuska. You've still got the two corners. You still got James Hendricks. And, of course, you still got Jabril Cox. So there's certainly going to be enough playmakers to really bring the rest of the kids along. But this is going to be important 60 minutes. You talk about the NFL getting, you know, like four preseason games. This game against Butler is NDSU's preseason game. It's going to count. They're very serious about it. But the reps that these kids get against Butler are going to be absolutely massive when it comes to UND, Delaware, and the Valley schedule.
All right, so when you look at this game, Vegas, we've talked about it, thinks it's going to be somewhere around a 52-7 type of game. It shouldn't be close. It shouldn't be a blowout. So what, Ross Uggelman, is your official BisonReport.com prediction for what goes down at Target Field this weekend?
Give me the dogs and the points. I like 55-10 NDSU, which would be a cover by the Butler Bulldogs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how in your right mind you could take NDSU with a 46.5 point, but again, kudos to you if you can.
Yeah,
because good God Almighty.
You know, we don't encourage any kind of that nonsense on this show, but I just cannot imagine holding a ticket, a football ticket in my hand, and knowing that I need 48 and a half points.
It's just, there's so many things that could happen. And even if they win 42-3, it's like, well, we're dominating victory, but I didn't cash. So Larry, you heard it right there first. That's Ross Uglum's prediction. Ross, do you have anything for the people? And if not, take us on out.
I don't. Hey, we mentioned it before, but I really want to see everybody out at Darby's on Friday and Saturday. Bison Report Radio, for the first time ever, is going to be broadcast. It's going to be in conjunction with the morning kickoff with Andy Rickoff. We are doing that show together from 9 to 11 on Saturday morning. I'm also going to appear on the Insiders Friday from 11 to 1. Come to Darby's. There's going to be a ton of Bison fans. We're going to be broadcasting live. It's going to be just a fantastic time. Hey, thanks everybody for listening, and go Bison.